Life in the city has its share of strange and dangerous things. But at least in more populous areas, there is the expectation of the unusual, and a tolerance of the unorthodox. And acts of aggression or sedition are met with swift resolve in the strange find good company. But the city is not the province of the truly bizarre. The weirdest things brew where people have room to roam, under the cover of solitude, into the nooks and crannies that are tucked down too deeply into the landscape, into areas too secluded for the light of day to shine, or the influence of social norm to affect, or the long arm of the law to reach. This is a place where the expectation of consequence and the fear of retribution are unknown. This is where the schemers hide, the occultists practice, and the psychotic take refuge. This is where the overly curious do weird things, and the eccentric know no bounds. This is where the drifters wind up, where the addicts squat in abandoned land, or in silos, or even underground in hidden bunkers. This is where things that are oftentimes too bizarre or repulsive to believe can and do take place. Prepare your mind and join me in a journey into those hidden away places I like to call the Devil's Playground. An interview with Dr. Wallace Zedd. Mr. Adams, would you have sex with an alien if it looked like a human? I mean, would you willingly have consensual sex with an attractive mate if that mate were really beautiful? But before you did the deed, you happened to find out that he or she was from another planet? This question was posed to me when I was working on one of the biggest black budget projects in this country's history. The person who asked me was my section supervisor. He was a military man, an administrator, and one of the few men on the base who had access to all the projects we were working on collectively. I was the director of my section, or unit, and we were a group of scientists, sort of a dream team of creative minds. But we weren't vetted because of our pedigree, or our accolades, or our SAT scores. We were chosen because at some point we had done something to challenge and disprove the conventional canon of thought in our respective disciplines. Mine happened to be genetics. And I had a crackerjack team of scientists at my disposal. My particular area of expertise was the application of engineering principles to initiate the rapid and artificially induced mutation of the human genome. I had been working on that specialty for years before mankind finally cracked the human genome. But after that, I was actively recruited because I was damn near the only scientist working on manipulating human DNA using designer viruses. But we weren't working on alien technology or living side by side with extraterrestrials, so far as I knew. So it was a funny comment for him to make, and it stuck with me. But the things we were working on were every bit as strange to the layperson as having face-to-face contact with an extraterrestrial. We had an incredibly advanced supercomputer with dedicated software to simulate the various effects of genetic manipulation. We had to start with a simulation. My greatest breakthrough was in the area of human intelligence. I could triple the intelligence of a potential subject. That alone was phenomenal. We were tweaking every known variable: human height, hair color, texture, eye, color, hand, feet size, even number of digits. But there were limitations. We could never potentiate the subject to be much larger than 8 feet tall without serious complications. The heart and liver would fail in early adulthood. Similarly, making a subject too short led to malformed organs, thus making it undesirable. A close colleague of mine was working on longevity by studying the disease known as progeria. By understanding the underlying genetic mechanism that caused a human being to age so rapidly, we could perhaps reverse that mechanism and increase human lifespan. It was promising research. But it was abruptly halted when they found out that we were actually experimenting on live subjects. I don't know what they were expecting, sending a team of focused, determined scientists into a field such as this and then preventing us from carrying out the very fruits of our labor. Science doesn't have a conscience, Mr. Adams. It doesn't have a moral compass. It only has breakthrough and achievement and understanding as its goal. Science seeks to understand how things work and why they work and the way that they do, and engineering applies those principles to create practical advancements in that body of knowledge. Humanity has a conscience, and mine developed both during and after my time as a government scientist. I left because I didn't want them exploiting my technology for the wrong reasons. Oh, I knew I was on the right track, but they wanted to take all my notes in my research and they wanted to give it to someone else to perfect. They thought I was stumbling, and there was a glitch. But I was the one who discovered the key to unlock true, unlimited human potential. The main problem was that there was a link between the genes responsible for brain size and... well, there were only two ways to increase intelligence dramatically. We either had to increase the number of folds in the brain, or we had to increase the volume of the brain itself. And that would mean expanding the cranium. Increasing the number of folds proved to be risky and complicated. Simply increasing the size of the brain was the clear answer, and we did that. But in so doing, we came across another stumbling block. The main complication was that we had to modify the genes responsible for bone growth, particularly in the cranium, along with increasing the size of the organ. You see, there is no automatic correction system when you start to modify genes. If you make a change in one set of parameters, you have to adjust. You have to deal with the domino effect. So the second complication we came across was with the genes for bone growth. We had to keep them soft, the platelets. But an unfortunate byproduct of that was that we miscalculated and we could not just switch off or delay the fusion of the platelets in the cranium. Our efforts affected the bones throughout the body. So the result on the embryo, and subsequently on the child, was that the bones throughout the body remained soft and malformed. So, the subject we created had an enlarged cranium and the platelets did not fuse, so the brain was allowed to swell and grow to phenomenal proportions, rather like a misshapen watermelon, because the growth of the brain was not even. The subject's head began to assume a lumpy appearance, but as long as we kept the cranial tissue protected, the subject was fine. Not only fine, in fact, but fantastically intelligent. A fantastically intelligent specimen. I must mention that the research we were doing, the research that I spearheaded, happened years before CRISPR was ever developed. Things got more precise. Things got better. They had a better technology, but we had pioneered a form of gene editing. So they tried to take my work and they tried to shut me up. But I patented my work and I left the organization and I continued my work in private and I got paid hush money. My agreement with them was to take my money and never let my work surface because, as they say, the show must go on, you know? So the agreement, as it were, stated that if I ever opened my mouth about what I was working on, they would do two things. First, they would discredit me, and then they would initiate a smear campaign against me. They couldn't do anything about the money I had, but they could take away my credibility, my sense of stability, at least in terms of being a regular member of polite society.
And now a word from our local sponsor. This is your friendly neighborhood groove master, Leonard Velcro Pants, telling you that there's more to bringing back the sweet 70s than that old endless looping heavy-duty strength music brick we used to call the 8-track tape. Remember Mood Rings? Now your funk daddy here has come up with a new spin on the old color-changing temperature-sensitive ornaments we all used to wear with style. In conjunction with my affiliate, Dom O. Cornelius Products, I am proud to present the newest permutation on an old favorite hand jewel. We call it Mood Swings. It's a party packet guaranteed to give you the attention you always knew you deserved. Using a combination of a mood-enhancing pill and a specialized set of funky contact lenses, you can have people watching you zip around that dance floor at 3 times the speed of light. But they ain't gonna be watching your feet or your legs. Hell no. They'll be staring directly at your eyes. What you do is this. Pop in the lenses and then pop one of our 5 patented pills titled Happy, Heavy, Hairy, Hippie, or Scary. As your mood changes to the desired dance mode, your eye color will change with it. You're gonna freak them all out, man. But that's who you are. You're a mood swings kind of person. Oh, yeah.
And now back to the show.
I got the hell out with my money. Of course, I agreed to their terms. I just wanted out. And I think they knew that my ego was far too big to keep my mouth shut. I knew it was. So I beat them to the punch. I changed my name. Well, first I went on a soul-searching mission. I just needed to clear my head. I didn't need the money. I didn't even know what to do with the money. I've always been a spiritual soul. Aside from my proclivity for science, I'm spiritual. And I found that the two can coalesce and reconcile. I want you to know that despite what you may have read about me, or what you might know or think you know, I'm sincerely devoted to my flock. And if you don't know about me, maybe I should take this opportunity to tell you a bit more about myself.
Please, go on.
Where should I begin?
How did you start the group?
Around 25 years ago. Oh, you said how, didn't you? But before I get to that, I need to explain the transition.
That was about 2 years after you left your position, wasn't it?
That's right. Thank you for being nice about it. I got fired, William. And after that, I was a mess. I knew that I would be financially set for life, and there was some comfort in that, but my purpose had been removed. As I told you before, I didn't care about the money, and I know that sounds odd, but I loved my work.
But you said you continued your work on your own, didn't you?
Yes. But right after I was let go, I sank into a depression. Not a debilitating sort of depression, more of a chronic anxiety with strong overtones of paranoia. Friends were worried. What few friends I had, that was. And an old friend and colleague of mine invited me to go to a meeting just to get me out of the house. It was a special interest group. It's not the sort of thing I'm accustomed to doing, but it really seemed to help. It was just the thing I needed, actually.
A gestalt therapy group?
Not exactly. You see, this old colleague of mine had some sort of trauma, the result of some sort of encounter. And he'd had some regression therapy to uncover the details and get to the root of his problem. He made great progress, and he had gone through this difficulty just a few months before I went through mine. And his hypnotherapist had recommended this group to him. It was a group of UFO abductees.
I see.
Oh, I hear the hesitation in your voice, William, but they were a fantastic group of folks, and the stories were fascinating. And the whole experience really got me out of my dark place.
Okay. So how long did you stay?
Several weeks.
So this laid the foundation for your group? You recruited UFO abductees.
Oh no. This is how I came to reconcile my work with the reality that is all around us. But it has been obscured from our view by our own hubris and ignorance. I opened my eyes and my mind to these people, and they showed me the way.
I'm not sure I understand.
They had been planning an outing, a campout. It was an area that had been a hotbed for activity.
Activity?
UFO activity. They were convinced that we'd have an encounter, Mr. Adams. Have you ever met a group of people who were so full of conviction that you just had to listen to them? You just had to listen and to see what they were getting so excited about? At the time, I admit I was very skeptical, but I'm also respectful of others. Even if I were to have felt a sense of intellectual superiority to what I felt was their nonsensical and superstitious claims, I still listened. I entertained their beliefs because I wanted to be accepted into their tribe.
I do understand that instinct.
I thought you might. So they took me into their fold, and we planned out the camping trip. Four of the group members had RVs, and we all pitched in for supplies. We would camp out over a long weekend, Labor Day weekend, and that weekend changed my life forever.
That's when you started the cult?
My organization, Mr. Adams. Refer to us as the Soldiers of Righteousness, please. We do not consider ourselves a cult, and quite frankly, I am offended at the false reference.
My apologies. That's when you started your organization?
That's when I came up with the idea for it. The time was right. We went into that camp out with complete conviction that we would meet our kin from outer space.
You believe that these creatures from outer space were your relatives?
They are all our relatives, Mr. Adams, and they are not creatures. They are very human, albeit with technology so advanced it'd make your head spin sideways.
So tell me, what are they like? I'm fascinated to know, and I'm sure our listeners are too.
Well, I will start with Rosara and Arnovic. They are both astronauts, a husband and wife team. We camped out at the crest of a ravine, very picturesque. We began drinking ayahuasca tea. I realize that this is a mild hallucinogen, but this was suggested as a means to open our minds and connect us to the experience. It also contained a mild sedative to keep us calm when we finally did have our encounter. The encounter was as revealing as any of the great works of ancient wisdom held in the great library of Alexandria. It was as illuminating as any of the religious teachings set in stone or any mystery locked in a palatial tomb. It was, in short, the truth. And the truth is all I ever wanted. There are many who wish to be anesthetized or deluded or petted and comforted in this life, but I can handle the truth. And as a harbinger of truth, or a trustee, if you will, I became a Moses for the New Age. I had seen the image of God, and he has stricken my hair white, and he hath given me purpose and a voice, and that purpose was unfetteringly resolute. I was to find my lambs and lead them as my flock. I was to vet my flock with the care that a connoisseur of wine takes with his elixir. I was to choose my flock with my own eye and my own hand. I had been given the authority and the responsibility to create a new strain of humanity, a commune of my own design. And the only thing I had to do in return was to give my God an offering. To provide the seed for my flock to help fertilize new worlds with the wonderment of humanity.
Fertilize new worlds with the seed of your flock. Explain that for us, if you would.
Oh, it is nothing more than a pinprick, William. Just a little gift, a harvest. Let me clarify something here. My God would better be termed gods. They are a plurality, and they are male and female alike, and they are like us. But to eliminate confusion with my flock, I will refer to them as our space brothers and sisters, or alternatively, our cosmic family. As far as my flock are concerned, they are collectively what you might refer to as God, in that they are our creators.
That's most interesting. Most interesting.
Thanks for listening to the Devil's Playground Show. Check out our site at thedevilsplaygroundshow.com. Check out our merchandise store at tinyurl.com/thedevilsplaygroundshow.
You've been listening to The Devil's Playground.